We're talking today with Clay. We're talking today with Clay Pope. Clay, of course, has been involved with conservation work here in the state of Oklahoma for literally years, and but most of your career, I guess, Clay's been involved with conservation districts and other work in the conservation side of the agricultural community. Right now, you're doing some consulting work with several groups, including Redlands Community College, and they're doing a lot of work on soil health. Soil health is one of those buzzwords that's kind of popped up in, what, the last 3 or 4 years.
Well, and, you know, you think about soil health and what it can mean and what the potential is as far as trying to restore the health of our soil and what we can do to increase both productivity and profitability through different land management practices. You know, if you stop and think about it, from initial plow up, we've lost anywhere from 60 to 70 to, in some cases, 90% of the organic matter out of our soils. Now, why is that a big deal? Well, it's that organic matter serves as the home for the bugs, bacteria, and fungi that over millennia have developed a symbiotic relationship with the plants that are growing on the surface of the ground. And if you stop and think about it, there's more life in a teaspoon of soil than there are people walking on the face of the globe. And 10 years ago, we didn't know a lot of this stuff even existed. But one of the things that we found out is that microbial community under the soil, again, going back to that symbiotic relationship, does things as far as maintaining the structure of the soil, increases pore space, increases the ability of the soil to hang on to moisture. It also has a relationship with those plants that makes more efficient nutrient uptake. In fact, there's some studies that ARS has that would suggest that about 60% of the fertilizer we put on the ground, if we don't have a healthy subsoil microbial community, we're basically wasting 60% of that fertilizer that we're putting down. So, I mean, if you're not doing things to improve the health of your soil, do yourself a favor. Don't put down fertilizer. Go to the bank, get your money, go down to the creek, and start throwing dollar bills into the water, because that's basically what you're doing. And the cool thing is the same things that we want to do to help increase the organic matter and the microbial community and the life inside that biosphere under the soil are the same things that we want to do to control erosion. And you know, a fact that we don't think about in Oklahoma, because we do a great job with soil conservation. You know, look at the drought. The drought of 2011, worse than anything that we saw over those 4 years than we saw in the Dust Bowl, or even worse than the drought of the 1950s. You didn't see the return of the dust storms because of the good work farmers and ranchers in partnership with conservation districts and NRCS and the Conservation Commission, things they've done to control erosion in the state of Oklahoma. It's a great success story. But even with all the good work that we do, to this day, for every pound of wheat we produce in this state, we lose roughly 2.5 pounds of soil. That's not sustainable. But more than that, that's the source of all our wealth in production agriculture. Everything we do is, and I don't know what land's going for where you live. Of course, now I'm in that stack area, too, there in Kingfisher County where they're still drilling oil wells. But I'll guarantee you an acre of land's worth quite a bit. But even if you didn't have that oil play, that, you know, that is the basis of all our wealth in this industry. It's really everything that civilization rests on. It rests on that inch of topsoil. So, again, if you're not doing things to help improve the health of the soil, to help control erosion, to help harden your system to extreme weather events, again, don't farm. Just go down to the bank, get your money, and start throwing into the creek, because that's what's happening with your topsoil. If we can do things to improve the health of the soil, we can be ready for droughts and floods. You know, we're going into another drought. We're slipping into it right now. Before that, in 2015, we had the wettest year ever in the history of the state of Oklahoma. We're seeing more and more of these weather events. You know, we've always had droughts and floods. What we're seeing right now, it seems like the droughts are getting a little bit longer, a little bit hotter. We're seeing rain coming in chunks and a little different time than we've seen in the past. If we can do things to prepare our farming and ranching systems for those extreme weather events, we're better off. And if it's also in a way that can also increase fertilizer efficiency, you know, I've seen Ohio State has thrown some numbers out there, anywhere from $600 to $700 worth of additional nutrients available for growing crops if you can increase your organic matter by 1%. Kansas State says that you can triple soil's water holding capacity by increasing organic matter by 1%. You know, that's around 1,200 gallons of water per acre per year for growing crops on average. A lot more people have left this state because it's too dry than too wet. If we can do things to prepare for those extreme weather events, if we can increase our bottom lines by being more efficient with and lower our input costs, if we can do things that hopefully over time can increase productivity, you know, we've talked about those ceilings that we've seen in wheat yields and other crops. maybe it's, you know, the Green Revolution was one of the greatest things that's ever happened in the history of man. Norman Borlaug and the people who worked with him saved countless lives in famine as we know it. The Green Revolution was not an end unto itself. I think the next step is the Brown Revolution, and that's understanding that we need to start paying some attention to what we've got underneath the soil, because we got a growing world population. What's going to be 10 billion people that we're going to have to feed one of these days, by 9 billion by mid-century. We've got to do what we can to produce food and fiber and do it in a way that also helps our bottom lines and helps us deal with some of these other challenges that we're facing. So we're excited about it. We're hopeful that we can help spread the gospel a little bit. Redlands Community College has committed to soil health efforts in the state of Oklahoma in partnership with the Agricultural Research Service and NRCS. We've got a field day coming up on January 19th. It'll be the fourth one that we've had at Redlands. We started in February of 2016. Redlands, working with the Noble Foundation, with NRCS and others, is doing some research plots on their land. We've got some other people that we're partnering with. We have some of the Native American tribes are doing demo plots. The State Association of Conservation Districts has some demonstration projects they're working on. Oklahoma State is as well. And, of course, and what we're doing through Redlands also translates into the ARS work that goes into Kansas and Texas also. So we're just trying to push this information out there and give producers some ideas on what they can do to help their bottom line and like I said, be prepared when those droughts and floods come.
As, you know, you mentioned the fact that we've really learned a lot in the last, 10 years or so. I guess some of our no-tillers that have been around for quite a while, they were always working really hard, you know, even 15, 20, 30 years ago, of trying to increase that organic matter, you know, incorporating cover crops back into their practices and whatnot. They kind of... They saw the results. They didn't know necessarily what was going on.
Well, you know, we've seen bits and pieces of this over the years. You mentioned that I used to work for the conservation districts. There's a gentleman who I hope he doesn't mind me using his name, Ben Pollard, who was the executive director or the assistant director of the Conservation Commission for years in the state of Oklahoma. And when he retired, he said, "Clay, I wish I'd been working on soil health all these years." And I said, "Ben, you don't realize it. You have been going back to the work that we found out the hard way in the 1930s, what happens if we don't control erosion. Those same practices, minimizing tillage, doing things to restore cover back on highly erodible land, doing things to better manage our land base. That's part of the component of soil health, but that's just one tool. Cover crops are another one. If we can keep something green and growing on the land as much as possible, it's those crops that are and those plants that are growing on top of the soil that feed that microbial community that I was talking about that then have that relationship with our money crops when we put them on the ground. It's incorporating livestock. You know, that's something in the upper Midwest people have been having some trouble with because as they've switched into corn and beans, they've moved away from cattle. You don't see the livestock there like you do on dual-purpose wheat in this part of the world. But having a ruminant animal, that's how the good Lord made this place. I mean, that's how it was built for buffalo. It was built for, and it's just the idea of finding how there's a term called biomimicry. Can we find a way that we can grow food and fiber? I'm not talking about organic. I'm not talking about hobby farms. I'm talking about honest to goodness, modern production agriculture, the things that we've got to do to feed and clothe the world. But do it in a way that maybe copies a little bit the design that was originally set up in this country. And as we've done some of those things and looked at that, we start to find out that there's some benefits to it that we really need to be taking advantage of. Everybody's got a different reality in their operation. Everybody's got a, you know, I'll use our own farm and ranch. You know, my brother and I, mom's the boss, but Steve and I farm and ranch out there in Kingfisher County. We've got about 3,500 acres. We started no-tilling about 13 years ago. We've only been using cover crops for the last couple of years, but we're already seeing an improvement in the soil. There's a school of thought that probably if you could use cover crops in a conventional till system and then switch to no-till, you might be ahead of the game because, you know, one of the things in no-till circles you always talk about that three-year hump before you start really seeing the benefits to no-till. Well, could you do things to jumpstart the organic matter by using cover crops and then convert into a no-till system, or are you better off that way? There's some of the additives going back to Redlands and some of the work that they're doing. They're working with SureCrop and with other partners in the private industry side that have biological additives. You know, can you go in and apply things on the ground that then can jumpstart that biological activity and maybe do it in a way that you know, you can move a little quicker and make some different adjustments. So there's a lot of pieces to this puzzle, but we do know if we can do things to improve that organic matter, if we can improve that biological activity, there's multiple benefits to go along with it.
Tell me about the January 19th meeting.
On the 19th, we're going to be having a seminar there at Redlands. It's going to be at the Darlington Ag Campus. That's up north of El Reno for everybody who knows where the old Darlington Game Bird Hatchery. That's where that's at. It's going to be at the chapel there on the Darlington campus there north of town. Our meeting this time is going to be focusing on tools to help producers to look at soil health. We're going to have representatives from the Agricultural Research Service Station there at Fort Reno talking about some of the research and some of the work that they're doing. We're going to have people with NRCS talking about tools. That's not just technology. That's also financial tools. NRCS is going to talk a little bit about the rewrite of the Conservation Stewardship Program. Sign-up's coming up on February the 3rd. This might be something that people that are looking at that could look at. RMA is going to be coming out and talking about crop insurance and some of the options because, you know, it's always one of the challenges. So many of our counties, you can't double crop and get insurance, but there's the whole farm plan. There's some other tools that are out there. There's some things you could do under existing insurance. RMA is going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to have some the producer perspective because, again, end of the day, you can have researchers talk to the blue in the face. You can have, you know, folks with the conservation agencies talk to the blue in the face. Bottom line is it going to work on a guy's land? And stuff that looks good on paper doesn't always translate so well out in the field. We're going to have some producers talking about what they've seen as far as adoption of technology, both the good and the bad, what they see as barriers, what they see as opportunities. We're going to do a drone demonstration looking at UAVs, which they have a role to play as far as crop scouting and also some deals with livestock. We're going to be doing some of that at the meeting and just kind of taking a little different tack. It's going to be cold. We're not going to go out and look at the field plots, but we are going to be talking about what kind of tools and technology are there to help us along. Redlands, obviously, is sponsoring the event, along with the USDA Southern Plains Climate Hub, which is headquartered there at Fort Reno, and then the Oklahoma Association of Conservation Districts is working with us on this meeting as well. So we're excited. We hope to have good turnout. We're going to start at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I'd love to see everybody there.